Glad that we could be together on this Wednesday evening. Sunday evening.
You going to sleep today?
It's been a little rough today, it seems. I did take a nap. I'm already half through the week. Don't y'all wish y'all were there with me already. Not to rush things along, but Sunday evening we are here, in which we're going to be talking about the neutrality in war. Neutrality in war. I think that's one of my favorite studies when I start thinking about the things that the United States does and, you know, the kind of things we get involved in. And going back to the days of the Old Testament, in which we'll look at Obadiah a little bit here. And we remember that of Jacob and Esau, who were brothers. And we remember about the birthright. We remember what happened with that of Esau. And what formed was the Edomites. And one of those places that we see is Obadiah chapter 1, because there's only one chapter. If you look at verses 10 and 11. For violence against your brother Jacob, shame shall cover you, and you shall be cut off forever. And the day that you stood on the other side, and the day that strangers carried captive his forces, when foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, even you were as what? One of them. I think that we think about family in this. I know I think about it every time I read it. And the horrible things that were taking place. And we say, well, really, it's really not that bad. They weren't really doing too much to them. There were times in which they were neutral. As it says here, in that day, you stood on the other side. In the day that strangers carried captive. Did they carry them captive? No. Strangers did. They were standing on the other side. And we're going to talk about that this evening. Review of our text, the book of Obadiah is directed to the nation of Edom, as we stated. And as we stated there as well with that Esau, Edomites were related to the Israelites through that of Abraham. We remember that. And while never found of each other, they usually managed to live peaceably next to each other. Use that word usually. When Israel fell, Edom did not make any overt move. I want you to kind of consider that a little bit. They did not support the Israelites, we remember. They did not directly attack either, though they did covertly aid the Babylonians. Okay? We say these covert operations that they had. They actually kept the Israelites from escaping, you remember? They plundered the empty city. And they rejoiced in Israel's defeat. So now we're seeing a little bit more of what's taking place here, aren't we? Because that's what we find throughout Obadiah even. And so, at a time when kin should have stood for kin, when treaties should have been honored, when neighbors should have banded together, the Edomites remained neutral. We say, is that really so bad? They were neutral. I want you to consider their ancestor. We mentioned Abraham. When Lot was carried off to war, what did Abraham do? Abraham did not stand by, did he? But actually you find that he gathered an army and he rescued Lot. That of Genesis chapter 14 and verses 14 through 16 is actually where you find that. In which it says, now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. So he brought back all the goods and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. You see, Abraham felt a need to act, didn't he? He felt the need to do something about the situation in which his family were in. Yet it's very interesting that although we have this record in Genesis 14, verses 14 through 16 about what Abraham did, yet we find that his descendants will not do the same. They wanted to see Israel ruined. Micah 4 and verse 11, as many other nations did. Now also many nations have gathered against you who say, let her be defiled and let our eye look upon Zion. You remember how a lot of those nations looked at Israel. So we see that there are some problems here. And as we make those applications as we go along, violent crimes occur with increasing frequency. You know that? A lot of the reason this happens is too many people don't want to get involved. Just don't want to get involved. Y'all have heard of me talk about me working during a bunch of burglaries that were taking place just all over center. It was the kind that, you know, people would go and talk about kicking doors. People were kicking in doors. These guys were going and plundering businesses and, you know, just breaking windows and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And late at night, well, of course, that's usually when the burglars come out. And so I wore plain clothes, and I had a hoodie, and I had my hoodie over my head, and it was cold. I was driving a car, not a marked unit, of course. That kind of good, well, kind of gave me away, I think. But I pulled up my little car that I had, and I'd park it in a parking lot somewhere, and I'd walk the streets. I'd walk from the side of the square all the way to the other side, here and there, go through dealerships, go check on these buildings, and just, I'd be jerking on doors. And I kept thinking, somebody's going to call in on me. Here's this lady, she's passing by, and I got that hoodie on, and I looked over at her, and she's just, and she's gone. And I kept thinking, she's going to call in on me. She didn't. I'm jerking on doors, suspicious, and hiding in bushes and stuff. I know y'all probably picture me, you know, crouched down in bushes and stuff, you know, thinking, well, there's that crazy preacher, Church of Christ in Joaquin, he's crouching in bushes again. You know, you think about it, but really, that's kind of community. That's kind of evolved here. Nobody really wants to get involved. Nobody, you know. If that was your house or your business, what would you want? I want somebody to call the police and say, hey, there's something going on here. Let me get some action. We understand that in a physical sense and how these violent crimes begin to occur and things that with increasing frequency because people don't want to get involved. You know, and I think about that one that we studied not too long ago in Luke chapter 10. Do you remember who that was? The Good Samaritan? That's a good one. I like that one. I like to study that one from time to time to remind myself. Once again, it's myself that I'm concerned about, first and foremost, whether I'm doing the right thing. But Luke chapter 10, it's very interesting that in that parable, you have some individuals that we studied a little while back. And you remember this certain man that went down from Jerusalem and he fell among what? Thieves. Okay? Stripped him of his clothing, he wounded him, departed, leaving him half dead. Half dead he was lying there. And it was just by chance that it says that a priest in verse 31 came down that road. A certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by where? The other side. He was going to, I'm going this way. I don't want to have to deal with this individual here. Well, who came next? A Levite was brought along here. When he arrived at the place, came and looked, and what did he do? He passed by on the other side too. And you can just see these people, you know, this priest and this leader, they're just gazing at this individual. They might not have wanted to really look at him. You know, you just kind of have your own mental image there of what was going on. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. When he saw him, you notice what the quality, the kind of character that he had, the kind of heart, compassion took over. He went to him and he bandaged him. You know, you see that kind of care. What would I want that person to do for me if I was in his situation? You know, Brother Chris brought that out and talking about the homeless man there. Had a sign and he changed just one thing. Remember the question? What if it was you that needed food? What if it was you? You know, when you put in that kind of perspective, what if I was this guy that fell among the thieves and I'm over there? Where's my help in my time of need? And Jesus really, he kind of hurt him a little bit on that, didn't he? You know, because there was one, he's wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, you know, who is my neighbor? You know, he already had this kind of worked out in his mind, but he wasn't ready for the parable that Jesus followed along with it, did he? You know, the question was an attempt there to limit the demands of the law by suggesting that some people are neighbors while others are not. And Jesus said, these all. You know, it goes back to that golden rule, do unto others you just had them do unto you. People don't feel an obligation to help those in need. Kind of seems very interesting that's the Edomites even might have had that situation there, right? I think about Job chapter 6 and verses 14 through 20. If you go back to that of Job, we see an instance there that, well, Job had some friends, or it seemed a little bit troublesome at times for him and all that he was going through. But Job chapter 6 and verses 14 through 20, I want you to notice there what it says. It says, to him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by what? His friend, right? Even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty, my brothers have dealt deceitfully like a brook, like the stream of the brooks that pass away, which are dark because of the ice and into which the snow vanishes. When it is warm, they cease to flow. When it is hot, they vanish from their place. The paths of their way turn aside. They go nowhere and perish. He goes on to say there in verse 19, the caravans of Timaluk, the travelers of Sheba, hope for them. They are disappointed because they were confident. They come there and are confused. You know, Job here compares his intense disappointment with his friends to the thirsty caravans he talks about of Tima. And the travelers of Sheba, whose hopes for water, okay, that he's talking about there, were dashed by reaching the dry stream beds. Kind of get that image in your mind about what was going on with him. You know, think about the relationship and the feelings of disappointment that he had. The streams of the brooks that he talks about in verse 15, he compares them with that. The torrents of water that fill the ravines during the rainy season and pass away in the summer. Should be there in times of trouble. I say not just friends, but you would even think that the family, the descendants, well, they should really be there for you, shouldn't they? What about David? In Psalm 142 and verse 4, it says, look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has filled me. No one cares for my soul. No friends aided David while Saul sought for his life. You remember there that in Psalm 142 that, you know, David was hiding at that time. Remember that he would go and find himself. He was in a cave. That's where he was at. Hiding. He looked for, he had a plea for relief from his persecutors. He had this contemplation about what was going on. And what a desperate situation to say that no one acknowledges me. No one cares for my soul. Refuge has failed me. But of course he cried out to the Lord with his voice. His supplication. He poured out his complaint before him in verse 2. He declared before him his troubles. He knew that God was there. That God knew his path from the beginning. And there on his right hand, when my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. That's something to definitely take in, that Jesus, that God is the refuge for him. But you know, the design is that we're supposed to be those individuals to aid and help in time of need once again. David's friends, we mentioned there in Psalm 38 even, they stood aloof during his troubles. In Psalm 38, verses 10 and 11, it says that my heart pants, my strength fails me. As for the light of my eyes, it also has gone from me. Verse 11 of Psalm 38, he said, my loved ones and my friends stand aloof, he said, from my plague and my relatives. Do you know where his relatives were, he says, in verse 11, the latter part? Since they stand afar off. They stand afar off. The question that I ask, you know, we're thinking about Job and his situation and David and his situation. How can we have God's love without compassion for our fellow men? That's a good question, I think. That's a viable question. If you notice there, 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. And notice there in verses 16 down through verse 18. 1 John 3 verses 16 through 18. Says, by this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, in verse 18, let us not love in word or in tongue, but what? In deed, he says, and in truth. He said, there's got to be some substance to it, right? If we ignore the plight of the downtrodden, our sins, they will come back to haunt us. You know, you say, well, where do you find that in Scripture? Well, it's in Proverbs 21 and verse 13. Whoever shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be heard. Jesus talked about it during his time upon this earth. He says that you did not feed, you did not give me water to drink. Remember his talking? And they asked, the disciples asked, when have we ever seen you like that? We haven't. As you have done to one of them, you have done also to me, he said. You think about that. Can I excuse myself because of, well, many times use the word, well, ignorance. Well, Proverbs 24 and verse 12 even says, if you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart consider it? He who keeps your soul, does not he not know it, he says? And he will he not render to each man according to his deeds? Proverbs 24 and verse 12. And I would even go to say that it's far more than sympathy. The outworking of love. That of James chapter 2 even. James chapter 2. And if you notice there in verses 13 through 16. In James chapter 2 verses 13 through 16. If you're there with me. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works. Can faith save him? There's a question. It says in verse 15, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works, and I will show you my faith by my works. Well, I like that. You know, he says, I will show you. I will display it. It's definitely more than sympathy. So we say, well, where are we taking this? I think that with that question there, how can we have God's love without compassion for our fellow men? Jesus talked about it. We see it in James, the book of James. We see it in John. But I say that the application is greater. It's greater. Because we are described as being in a spiritual battle, in a spiritual war that's going on. That of Ephesians chapter 6 and verses 10 through 12 brings to mind that type of battle that we're in. And Paul, very descriptive and such about the warring not against the things of the flesh, but he talks about principalities, he talks about powers, darkness and such. Ephesians chapter 6, you go on, notice there in verses 10 through 12 where he starts talking about the whole armor of God. He says, finally, my brother, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand the evil day, and having done all, to stand. We are battling more than just, he says, flesh and blood. We're talking about Satan and his followers. We're told to be sober, vigilant. Well, that's what someone who in the army, you'd think that that's what they need to be doing. They need to be sober, vigilant. They need to be watching all the time about what's going on. Remember the days of old about the watchmen, about what their job was. Yet when some are overtaken in a fault, we stand aside in neutrality. Say, well, I really don't want to get involved, and I don't really want to get myself afraid to dirty ourselves, but honestly, Galatians 6 and verse 1 says, to restore, not avoid. That's an interesting statement, isn't it? That Paul tells Galatia, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, ye who are spiritual, do what with him? Avoid such one. It don't say that, does it? I know that a lot of people put that in there, but it says, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Now, there are some warnings there about ourselves. We have to be careful, but it says to restore, not avoid them. You know, going back to that of James, has something to say along that issue there, from what Paul's telling in Galatia. And he hits on it there in James 5. James chapter 5. And notice there in verses 19 and 20 even. Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. Notice what he's saying there. How important that is to have those that, I'm going to use the word compassion. I'm going to use the word concern. How important that really is. We need to bring them back. But yet, if you go to the Edomites and their way of thinking, that of what we read in Obadiah, did I cause their downfall? Nope. It wasn't my fault that they're in that situation, congratulating ourselves, but neither did we attempt to prevent it. See, when you kind of put it in that kind of perspective, it kind of throws it back. Some are neutral. Some are neutral on the truth. Folding when opposed. Compromise to settle disputes. When I think about those who compromise to settle disputes, keep the peace. It's really kind of what, well, the era in which we live. They want to try to keep the peace, but go about it in the meantime the wrong way. I think about Pilate. Don't you? You think about Pilate a little bit on that? In John 18? You know, you got this mob. What would you have done if you were Pilate? You know, you think about that scene in John chapter 18. I've been in mob situations, you know, people rioting and things and throwing stuff and all that. It's not a very fun situation to be in, nonetheless. But John 18 and verse 37 and 38, it says, Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" And well, Jesus answered. He says, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness of the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to him, "I find no fault in him at all." Now that's what he said. "I don't find any fault in this man." Pilate was in this struggle, wasn't he? Boy, you know, you think about somebody, it's time to get on the fence and stay there. I want to stay on this line. I can't cross it. Oh, what do you do? Well, Pilate, he gave him an ultimatum. This one or this one. You know, we talk about Joshua this morning. "Choose you this day whom you will serve." He says, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You noticed on the chart there, that you have this guy sitting over here, kind of picture that, maybe an apathetic type state of mind. And you got the lion, and then you got someone that's reaching out. One that's active versus one that's inactive. However you want to look at that. Pilate, he started falling over here, didn't he? Kind of trying to keep the peace. And we think about what our job is, though. Supporting the truth. I want you to think about 1 Timothy. Because that question was asked by Pilate. What is truth? You know, what is truth? Pilate washed his hands of it. he's done. You know, and I think that's a lot of times what happens today within the church. Wash your hands of it. You know, there's nothing really I can do about it. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 15. He said in verse 14, "These things I write to you, though I hope to come to you shortly. But if I am delayed, I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth." Am I supporting the truth? Am I standing there with Paul that, have I therefore become thine enemy because I tell you the truth? It's not our choice to modify God's word. It's just not. I can't appeal things here. I can't repeal them. We can't take a middle of the road position on things, the issues that face us today and has faced people before. We think about the abortion. We think about sexual promiscuity. You know, you think about those kind of things. Can we just take the middle of the road position? We talked about this morning in Hebrews chapter 5. We're supposed to discern between that which is good and evil. That's our minds. We're supposed to exercise our minds to discern between what's good and evil. What the Bible defines as good and evil. We can't alter the nature and the purpose of baptism. We can't alter that. The character of the first century church, the being of God. We can't alter that. In Him we live and move and have our very being. You know, you think about what Paul said in Acts chapter 17. There is absolutely no neutral position When you look at the Bible, there is no neutral position. And although the Edomites had in their mind what we read in Obadiah verses 10 and 11, you know, the Babylonians were really the ones that were the aggressors in this, weren't they? They were really the ones that caused the problems. You know, we think about, you know, Babylonians, we think, well, they're kind of barbaric people. We're just kind of over here. But you remember that verse again, what it said in verse 10 and 11 again? For violence against your brother Jacob, shame shall cover you, and you shall be cut off forever in the day that you stood on the other side. It reminds me of the Levite and the priest, doesn't it? They stood on the other side in the day that strangers carried captive his forces. When foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, even you were as one of them. You were. Now I want you to imagine that you were an Edomite in this, and here you are being told you were as one of them. Wait a second. Hold up. I don't think you understand completely what's going on here. You stood at the crossroads in the day of their calamity. Notice verses. Notice on through there. Verse 12. But you should not have gazed on the day of your brother in the day of his captivity. In Obadiah, verse 12. Nor should you have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Nor should you have spoken proudly in the day of distress. You should have not entered the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Indeed, you should not have gazed on their affliction in the day of their calamity. Nor laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. You should not have stood at the crossroads. Now think about this, to cut off those among them who escaped. Nor should you have delivered up those among you who remain in the day of distress. For the day of the Lord upon all the nations is near. All you have done, it shall be done to you. Your reprisal shall return upon your own head. Boy, you talk about that. That's some serious stuff there. Standing at the crossroads. They became stumbling blocks. That's what they became, even. They were standing there. They were hindering them from escaping their situation and their affliction. You take that and apply it to today. Am I a stumbling block? Am I an Edomite? Would these words be echoing to me today? That in the day of someone's distress, that I was a stumbling block to them? That I was not someone who reached out to try to help them? Standing at the crossroads. There is no neutral position. There is none. I would submit to you that the idea of confessing Christ is to make a lifelong stand with Him. With Him. Matthew 12 and verse 30 tells us, Jesus says, "He who is not with me is against me. And he who does not gather with me scattereth abroad." There's really no huge explanation to that. It's self-explanatory, isn't it? That's about as easy as you get. It's either we're on this side of the line or that side of the line. Joshua knew where the line was, didn't he? He knew where it was. It was well defined in his life, in his time in the nation of Israel. And he made a firm stand, a lifelong stand, with God. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I don't kind of see him over there going, you know, honey, as for us, we're going to serve the Lord. What was that? Everybody, you know that he said that as loud as he could and as proud as he could. He was happy about it, to take a stand. We were talking about this morning about shining. You know, how many times do you think about me shining as a light, leading someone to Christ? About preparing myself on a daily basis for the white waters, as we might consider them, the levels in which we go through life, things that we're tested with and deal with. If I'm in this situation, am I going to say, you know what, I'm going to kind of stay right there in the middle on this one? Or do I discern which is good and evil and say, that's wrong. Right is right, wrong is wrong. We have the scriptures. Neutrality is actually to oppose Christ. I don't see any middle fence there, do you? You don't see any. He who is not with me is against me. Okay? He who does not gather with me scattereth abroad. Well, there's no neutrality. To not work for Christ is to, in turn, really destroying his efforts. I become stagnant, not doing anything. That confession that we talk about with the mouth, confession is made to salvation. You know, we use that as a verse saying that, you know, when someone makes that decision in their life, saying, I need to become a Christian, I need to become a child of God. We use that verse, Romans 10 and verse 10, with the mouth, confession is made unto salvation. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? There's a confession there. Yes, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. That's not just a one-time confession before baptism. That's not a one-time thing. It's every day that I'm confessing. Jesus is the Son of God. He is the ruler of my life. I'm making a lifelong stand with Him in the efforts in which He lived, died, for the things that He stood for. I think that every time I read and study this, it's just a sad situation. It's sad. How Edom mistreated his own brother. Abraham left a great legacy, but they didn't follow suit with him. They just didn't. That's sad. A question that remains for us, I would say that the outcome of the battle is really already known. It's already known, right? But the question that remains for us today is, on which side are we actually fighting? Am I standing there with Joshua? You know, I in a way that I really wish I could have seen that. I wish I could have been there for that one. To see him stand as proud as he was and say that, choose you this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, the individual, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Man, that's amazing. The kind of loyalty, the kind of love and desire that he had for God. He wasn't going to allow anyone to get in his way, and he wasn't going to be a stumbling block for anyone. He wasn't going to remain neutral either in the times of distress and war. We're going to close the lesson with those things there. So get your psalm books ready. We took that physical idea of, you know, do I really want to get involved? Do I really want to get my hands, as we sometimes say, dirty? To get out there and do something for someone else. Whether they ask it of me or, once again, I simply see a need and do it. To him to knoweth to do good, and doeth it not, what does James say? To him it is sin. I think that hits home for us. For all Christians, to know that if we see something and we don't act upon it, and the opportunity is presented itself, it can turn into sin. I'm just not going to do it. If there is anyone that could know that today, or then in those times, it was the Edomites. They learned that lesson the hard way. And I hope that that's definitely not the case for us. Because as it states there, for the day of the Lord upon all the nations is near. As you have done, it shall be done to you. Your reprisal shall return upon your own head. Those words still echo today. The nature of God's judgment always reflects the nature of the sin being judged. I hope that we find ourselves just being reinforced that we're not neutral, that we are standing for what is right, that we are involved, heavily involved, in helping one another, encouraging one another, edifying one another, and bringing others to Christ. Hopefully that's definitely us. If we have found ourselves on a situation where we have become neutral, and there's something that's amiss in our lives, my friends, here's the opportunity. Here's the song of encouragement. If we're here and we're subject in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing a song that's been selected?
Have you been to Jesus for the cleansing power?